All right, guys. I hope you had a good holiday. Welcome to another edition of the Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I've got John Barbin on the line, and we've got some interesting stuff we want to talk about today. We want to talk about gaining weight versus gaining muscle, and because we get a lot of comments and questions about this, especially about lean body mass and things like that. So I think this is what we're going to tackle today. So, John, what's the deal? I mean, I know you want to talk about this. Where do you want to go with it?
Well, I guess we could just start with there's only really two things you can ever do when it comes to exercising and diet, and that's either gain or lose. I guess body weight is what people think, but if you want to get like right off the bat, it needs to be more specific. It's gaining muscle mass is what people are interested in, and losing body fat is is what people are interested in. So, but both of those things. The kind of the popular language is always weight. Like guys always say, "Oh, I got to gain 10 pounds. I want to gain some weight." And you know, people are like, "Oh, I got to lose some weight." But people don't really, like right off the bat, people need to check how they're saying it, because then it's easy to just, like, even though like you kind of already know you mean, well, I meant muscle. I meant gaining muscle. And, well, I meant losing fat. People don't say it that way, and if you don't actually very specifically say it that way and think about it that way, it's easy to get caught up. Focused on just the concept of weight in general. And I guess this kind of goes back to like the way you think is also tied into the words you use. But and then this particular word, weight, the entire diet and fitness industry is just about weight, and it messes people up when they don't really know what they're thinking about or talking about, because they're using the word weight, but weight can mean so many things. Like gaining weight can be fat mass, some amount of muscle mass, and a whole lot of water weight. And that's one, I mean, the water weight is something people don't even think about, but it's probably the thing that they're seeing the most on a day-to-day basis changing, especially when they see maybe pictures of a bodybuilder or some sort of competitor that's on an off season. Part of the look that they think is just weight is fat mass weight is actually water mass weight. So there's different things that go into the concept of body weight, and specifically, I guess today we're going to be talking about the concept of quote gaining weight for guys who think that they're trying to gain muscle.
Right, gotcha. Yeah, so really, it's kind of interesting considering that, like we were talking about just before we got on this call, like just over the weekend, you know, because I've been cutting down and things like that, and you know, I jumped on the scale the other yesterday morning or whatever, and I had zoomed back up to 202, and I was down to like 192 a couple of days ago, which is really interesting because I know that it's not fat. There's no way I gained 10 pounds of fat in 2 days.
Right. Well, in order to gain 10 pounds of fat, if we use the simple equation of a pound of fat is roughly 3,500 calories, you would have had to have eaten 35,000 calories in 2 days to gain 10 pounds of fat. So clearly you didn't do that. So how is that possible? How does the scale change?
Right. Well, I got jacked, man. That's what it was.
Oh, yeah.
My muscles just exploded, dude. Can't you tell?
It was 10 pounds of muscle.
Yeah, it was. It's 10 pounds of muscle, and you know, I'm just ripped out of my mind. I can't wait to take pictures.
Yeah, exactly.
I can sustain this. No, but it's obviously water. I mean, I can feel it. It feels like a bloat. So I understand, you know, because there's a lot of carbs and a lot of cookies and a lot of stuff like that. So, and you know, if people remember from the last podcast, you know, my comfortable way of going down was a little bit higher protein. So I was in essence carving down. So basically it was almost like a carb reload, for lack of a better way to look at it. Even though it wasn't purposeful, that's pretty much what happened. So I just gained a bunch of water, and you know, in the next day or so, it'll go back off. So it's not a big deal. So I'm not concerned. But before we even started talking about some of the stuff, and maybe some of the people listening, have seen something like this happen where all of a sudden the weight just goes up, like after a holiday meal or something, you just get frustrated. Just realize that, you know, it's not what it seems. You know, it'll normalize back in the next couple of days or so. So don't get too frustrated. That's one thing. That's one reason I'm glad we're doing a podcast directly after the holiday, because, you know, a lot of guys are going to catch, you know, this scale. They're going to see the scale, and it's going to be funky. It's going to look different than what happened before. I mean, because there's probably a lot of drinking, a lot of eating, a lot of, you know, not exercising, and just a bunch of stuff like that. So, Okay, so let's get back on topic. Topic of gaining weight versus gaining muscle. You know, I guess the big question is why do guys want to gain quote unquote weight in the first place? I mean, what's the big deal with that?
Yeah, that's the $64,000 question. Why do guys want to gain weight? This is the root of the Adonis complex, not to be confused with our system, the Adonis effect. But the complex is it's kind of reverse anorexia, kind of how girls, some girls, and I guess guys too, obviously can be anorexic. But people who just continually feel the need to lose weight long after they've gone below a healthy weight level, and they're actually, you know, their health is compromised, they're actually in danger. And they still can't tell. They look at in the mirror and they still think the solution is lighter and lighter. And obviously that's rooted in all kinds of emotional issues and, you know, various other things. It's not eating disorders and all that stuff. So anyways, this is the reverse. This is this constant need to be bigger. And well, how do you define bigger? Since you can't actually get any taller, you know, cause that's one way of defining bigger as tall. Nothing we know of yet to make you taller. I mean, at least you can get bigger as far as gaining weight. And guys think that they can do that sort of limitlessly, and they think that they can somehow just keep on building muscle mass in order to gain weight, which isn't necessarily the case. My first question to guys is, well, what makes you think that if you want to gain 20 pounds, what makes you think that's even possible? Like the reference point alone is what I think confuses people. They look around themselves and they think that there's more variation to body weight than there actually is. Now I need to qualify that. You definitely can be heavier. I mean, you can be 100 pounds heavier than you are right now if you want to. I'd say 95 pounds of that would probably end up being fat. But it's possible, and I don't think when guys say they want to gain weight, they're actually interested in gaining fat. I think what they're saying is they want to have bigger muscles. But why do you want to have bigger muscles, and how much bigger do you think you can be, and what arbitrarily makes you think you can do 10 pounds or 20 pounds or 30 pounds? And on the same note, what makes you think even 5 pounds isn't enough? So I bet you most guys listening think 5 pounds, you know, doesn't sound like enough. And they probably think somewhere between 10 and 15 or maybe even 20 sounds like it's probably doable and it would look good. And maybe 50 pounds sounds a bit over the top, and 2 or 3 pounds sounds just like ridiculously low. So, you know, I'm sure somewhere in there, this is jiving with most people, like, you know, 10, 15, that sounds good, 20 maybe. But I want to know where guys get that idea from. And I think I have the answer. I think it's athletes, bodybuilders, models they see in magazines, even celebrities. I think it's all of these places and other people they know that are slightly bigger than them. I think it's all of these, I guess you could say, models or examples of somebody somewhere that's bigger than them that has a look that they think they might want. And they're just kind of aggregating all these images they've seen into this ideal of what they think they can get to. And literally, to me, it seems like they're arbitrarily picking a number. They're like, 20 pounds, I think that's what I need. And you could set yourself up for a lifetime of frustration if you actually can't get those 20 pounds. So I think part of it's just a critical evaluation of where you got your idea of how big you think you can be in the first place. And the first step is deconstructing that down to a realistic expectation of what you can do and not this idea of what you think you can do.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because I know – you know, we talk about this. You know, what's the deal with that? I mean, I guess people lie. You know, I mean, heck, even back when I used to play ball and stuff like that. I mean, you know, in the little thing they list me out at, like, this is like when I was younger. They list me out at 5'10", but I was only like 5'8". You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, Oh yeah, all different sports do that. They embellish on height, they embellish on size, they embellish on all those things. Without actual, none of these things are sort of peer reviewed in a way where they even need to be held accountable. Like bodybuilders lie about their weight, athletes, you know, they'll lie about their weight, like you just said. I mean, and that's kind of common. Anyone who's been close to any of these sports know that sort of thing, that embellishment goes on to some degree. And then the image of how how big you think you can get to is confounded by all of this stuff. So you can never really be sure how big or heavy, I guess let's just say heavy, a particular person is in the look that they're in while you're looking at them, unless you're looking at them while they're standing on a scale. And then right. at that point, the truth comes out. At that point, you're like, oh, that person actually weighs that much. And then, is that a fasted weight or is that a fed weight? And is that a, as you, you know, as your example has shown, is that a carb loaded or carb depleted weight? And not to sound like, I mean, people who know our stuff know that we're not into that carb loading thing, but I'm just saying as an example, is that like a after Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner weight, or is that a eating low calorie during the week morning light weight? You know what I mean? Like there's, so your weight, you know, for a 6 foot tall guy like you and I, our weights can fluctuate like you've just shown 7 to 10 pounds, just based on how we ate within the last 24 to 48 hours. So if I say I'm 185, is that my heavy weight or is that my light weight? Like, is that my fasted weight and I actually fluctuate around 188, 89, or is 185 my heavy weight and I actually fluctuate around 181? Like, what does that number even mean? So that's another thing people don't think would even consider. And unless you weigh yourself really frequently and you're really paying attention to your calorie intake and your training status and other things that cause you to hold and release water, you know, things like creatine and some other supplements like that, or just a high salt day of eating. If you don't really pay attention and weigh yourself repeatedly throughout the day and throughout the weeks, and compare it to the way you've been eating, and actually kind of record all this stuff, you don't really know exactly what your weight's supposed to be. You just step on the scale and you're like, oh, you know, I was whatever today, and a couple of days ago I was a couple pounds lighter, and you know. You get a range. Like everyone has a range, but mm-hmm. it's hard to pin down what pushed you up and down in that range. That's another one of the things that confounds body weight. So couple that with not knowing the people who you're modeling yourself after, and not really knowing if they're on any kind of drugs or any of that sort of stuff, which we know from our experience in the industries that you can't really take a model you see in a magazine at face value for being clean. Or the weight they say, or even the height they say. So, I mean, it's same with athletes, like we've just said, and actors and stuff. Like you don't, if unless you know them personally, you don't know what they're putting in your body, their body, and you don't know what they've used to get to that state. So it's really, and you don't even know if they're lying about their numbers in the first place. So,
right.
But I think people use all of that as fact, and they're like, that's how big I want to be. I want to be like that, and then they get disappointed when they somehow can't do it.
Right. You know what's funny is that how long ago is this? This is probably maybe a month or two ago. I was looking online because I wanted to see where people were weighing in contest shape, and I couldn't find it anywhere. Like looking at all the places, it never said in any of the bodybuilding or natural or roided up or what it. None of the shows actually quoted where somebody came in weight wise that I could find, and I looked for a while. So not only does it not. Is it not evident what it is? It's also hard to find, you know, hard to get the date on it because it's almost like maybe people don't want you to know how much these people actually weigh.
Well, this data is, this isn't like a data set that actually exists in peer-reviewed scientific literature. Like this is like a sort of an ambiguous cloud of anecdotal information that seems to be available, but when you actually drill down to it, you're like, oh, okay. Here's a perfect example. If you go on like a NFL.com and look up team rosters or any of the pro sports, you'll get players' height and weight. Now, who knows when that was? Who knows if that's in the condition they're in as unless I'm watching a football game, you know, this afternoon. It is the height and weight of the player that's recorded. Is that actually the weight he is this afternoon, like, you know, while I'm watching him, or was that years ago when he weighed? And like, I don't know that they update those stats every single year. So how do I know what his weight is? So, if I see him on the TV screen and I'm like, hey, I like the shape that guy's in, I like to be that, then I look him up online and it says he's whatever weight and he happens to be my height. I'm like, oh, that must be attainable. Well, I don't know how accurate that measurement was. I don't know what year that measurement was even taken. I don't know. And I actually don't know what he weighs on the screen right now if I'm looking at him. So how am I supposed to know if I've set an unrealistic goal? And on top of that, do I I don't know the guy. I don't know if he's used any drugs in the past or if he's using them now. I don't, you know, I don't know any of that stuff. So I don't, this is where it kind of, it sounds very simple. You're like, oh, look the guy up. He's 200 pounds. He's my height. I should be able to do that. But then when you look at it that way, you're like, wow, it's really hard to determine if he even weighs that or if it's even possible without drugs.
Well, yeah, and that's funny too because, you know, we know a bunch of guys that, you know, they put their pictures online and stuff like that. And we like the guys. They're good dudes. But they took pictures when they were in their peak condition, right? And then, you know, and they'll be on their websites and stuff like that. And then next thing you know, they'll say in their blog post that they weigh, you know, 200 pounds now. Or they say they weigh 200 right now. But the picture they took, they were 180. But you're led to believe that that picture is a 200-pound picture.
Yeah, you know, yeah, and or if they even disclosed that the picture was a 180-pound picture, mm-hmm. you know, you may have this image in your head that they've went back up to 200 and still in that condition, but just 20 pounds heavier,
right?
And maintain that condition. So I guess the point we're getting to here is it's an irrational expectation to just pick. Now this part doesn't make any sense at all. To just pick a number and say that's how heavy I want to be. Like, I've never understood that, but guys are like, always say that, you know, it's not uncommon for guys to say, oh, I think I need to gain 20 pounds or 15 pounds, or whatever the number is, even five. It doesn't make any sense if you stop and think about it. Well, how do you expect to do that? And B, what makes you think that number of pounds is reasonable or doable? C, what's the time frame? You know, A, B, C, D, are you going to do that in the exact same condition that you're in now, or do you actually expect for any of that to be fat mass? Like, what makes you show me the evidence that A, B, C, and D are possible,
right?
And why you picked that? You know, where did that number come from? And so there is no. And the point, the fact of the matter is, there's very little evidence for dramatic gains in muscle mass. There's evidence for smaller gains in muscle mass, smaller than any of the fitness media will ever have you believe. That's for sure. And on top of that. There's more confounding variables like juvenile muscle growth versus mechanical muscle growth and where you are in your training status versus where you are in your overall just age. These are all like much longer topics to cover. But in general, those are all the sort of things that go into how much weight you could possibly gain. How much muscle mass could you possibly gain? Let's not say weight. Everybody can gain weight. But how much muscle mass could you possibly gain? And, you know, keeping your body fat level wherever it is now, but just gaining muscle mass.
Yeah. Where were you when you first started your cut down? What weight?
Okay, 217.
You were at 217.
I was 217, and that was a fed weight, I guess we could say. So I had eaten that. I wasn't on like a fast or anything like that. I was, you know, I had eaten that day, and that was a end of day measurement.
Right. And so, and for me as well, I was about, I got up to about 212, I think, at one point.
Okay.
And you know what the funny part about it is, and this might be skewing a little bit, but, you know, okay, so the other day I weighed down at 192, so I'll probably be about 192 in about 2 or 3 days again. And I am actually stronger now than I was then by a long shot. You know, mainly because I'm just been lifting more and stuff like that. But so, I look better now than I did then, but most guys would think 212, 6 foot, you know, and, you know, if they were with us in the gym, like you at 217, me at 212, clothes on, you probably wouldn't be able to notice because we've got relatively wide shoulders now, but you would assume that, you know, that was a good thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. People would look at you or I in the gym at, you know, just in clothes and be like, wow, that's a pretty big, thick dude. At, you know, when we're both over the 210 mark, and then now in a shirt I look smaller, but without a shirt I look way bigger. Mm-hmm. So I mean, what, I don't know. It's just and that's the other thing. Do you want to be? And actually, me and Brad Pilon used to say this all the time. We were like, do you want to be shirt big or do you want to be no shirt big? Like, what do you want to be? And since most guys spend their days wearing shirts, they don't mind. Or they'll tell themselves, they'll explain away being fat by having by filling out an extra large shirt as compared to the guy who just wears a large or even a guy who wears a medium. But when the shirts come off, the guy in the extra large doesn't so much look all that impressive anymore because the reason he's filling that shirt out is because he's just covered in layers of fat. So it's part of it is assume, and this is another thing that comes back to the athletes. I think people assume that pro athletes, like basketball players, football players, the ones we always see, I think people assume that they all have six packs or something under there. Like most of them don't. Like,
yeah,
it's obvious. Like certain ones, certain guys are ripped, like T.O. and stuff. Like, you know, you see those guys and they're ripped, but it's, they have, you know, there's a lot of pro athletes who are in clearly in physical condition to do their sports. And, but they're big dudes. They're heavy dudes. A lot of them, like, especially in North American style sports, like baseball, football, basketball, and even hockey players. But like, don't kid yourself that those guys are running around like totally six pack ripped. Like, even for a lot of those guys, they would have to do a 10 or 20 pound cut down to get down to, six pack rip. Not all of them, but for some of them. So, I mean, we shouldn't make the mistake assuming that just because it's an athlete that they're ripped. Like, I mean, there's a difference between having the muscle definition you see on the cover of a magazine, on a fitness magazine or bodybuilding magazine, and then the definition that an average athlete who's not an exceptionally lean athlete has. And it's totally different. But that difference could be 10 or 20 pounds of body weight.
Right. And that's interesting. I mean, a lot of people just don't think about it that way. So, okay. Well, let's think about this. I mean, you've said before that, you know, sometimes shorter guys might want to compensate a little bit, you know, for being heavier. But, you know, weight is weight, obviously. We've talked about that. And then talking about gaining weight and body fat percentage, you're talking – I mean, you sent me some over saying these are linearly correlated. So I guess what guys might not understand is that, you know, yes, they're getting heavier, but they're pounding on body fat, even though some of the measurements might not necessarily say so.
What's underlying all of this is the false belief that you can just train and eat your way to bigger muscles. It's just not possible without drugs. And even with drugs, there's still a limit. There's still a genetic limit. And I mean, so guys that use drugs think they can just keep going and going and going, and then they eventually figure out you can't. Guys that don't use drugs also think that they can keep going and going, and they at some point I think find out they can't. At least the guys who've tried steroids and stuff get it. They get like that the real growth that gets them to these, you know, superhuman sizes, these kind of freakish looking sizes, they realize that, oh yeah, I mean, there was no training that was ever going to do that to me. You know, and eventually some of them are like, yeah, and what was the point of being that big in the first place? It was almost like they get there and they're like, well, now what? So those guys sort of figure it out. And then the guys who don't use drugs are looking to the gains that the guys who used drugs got, but not knowing that maybe some of those guys were on drugs, and they think that they somehow can do it without drugs, and they're just looking for some magical way to make it happen through some fancy diet combined with supplement combined with crazy workout routine. And so they're chasing this thing that's impossible to catch. And it's part of the myth that the industry just keeps perpetuating, like, over and over and over again. They'll show you a picture of a guy who's on drugs, and they'll say, use our product to get there. So they're marketing something that's impossible. And people will chase it forever. And that's why you can just keep selling more and more, you know, weight gaining supplements or whatever, because the last one didn't work, but the psychological rooted need to be bigger, which we still haven't quite figured out, won't go away. So that makes that person susceptible to wanting to buy the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And they'll spend tons of money and years trying to do it, and it just will never happen. So part of this is what we try to teach people is give yourself the permission to be light. Like, it's okay to not be really heavy on the scale. Like, there's, you know, it's like, who cares what the scale says? Use the mirror as your guide to what, if that's what you like, the way you look, as far as a leanness and muscle mass standpoint, then who cares what the actual scale number is there? But if you're preoccupied with the scale, you'll somehow tell yourself a story to explain away the look in the mirror. So most of this is a little psychological game you're playing with yourself before you come to terms with how fast and how much muscle actually can be built and how lean you want to keep your body. So you could tell yourself – I mean, this keeps guys trapped, and we used to joke about this too back when I was working at the supplement company. Guys would get trapped in the bulk up phase for literally decades, because they were never big enough yet. So they kept training more and more to try to, like, it was just, you know, 5 more pounds and then I'm big enough and then I'll finally cut down. And then 5 more pounds and then I'm big enough and I'll finally cut down. But it was never big enough, right? And for guys who weren't using any kind of steroids, that process never ends, because they're looking over at a guy who is, and he's still that much bigger than you. And you're like, oh, like, I just got to get there and then I'll cut down. I just got to get there. But there is no there. You can't get there. Because wherever you are, that's it, and that's still never good enough. So that 5 pounds never comes. There's always 5 pounds more, and so these guys are trapped in this perpetual bulk up phase. They'll explain away why having that extra layer of fat, you know, it's all powder bulking, and you know, years go by and they're still trying to do it. And I mean, yeah, you'll be the quote big guy in your group, but completely at the expense of any level of conditioning or looking good at all without a shirt on. And so, I mean, if that's what you're happy with, you know, go ahead. But then I can't imagine too many guys are actually satisfied with that. And that's a trap people fall into for years. And they're deathly afraid. Like, people have said this to me on the blog and stuff. They're scared. They actually use the word scared of being a certain body weight. How ridiculous is that? How can you be scared of a body weight? Like, what's there to be scared of? So, I mean, the real answer is, what's the underlying issue of how you view yourself, that body weight means that much to your perception of who you are? Like, does it make you less of a man if you're lighter, or does it make you more of a man if you're heavier? So does fat mass actually not matter? So as long as you're heavy, so why not be everyone just eat their way to 300 pounds of fat, and at least you're a big guy? Like, there's some serious underlying issue there that attacks or addresses right at the core of what a guy's view of himself is, that somehow is tied to weight, to the point where guys use words like scared of being light.
Yeah, but there's some sort of, like, psychological, man, I don't know how to qualify it, but I felt it before. There's like this psychological threshold about being 200 pounds. Like, 200 pounds is like this magic number. And then after 200, it's like 225, and it's in 25 increments up over that.
So I lived that life. When I got to 200 in just out of high school and first year university, that was the goal. Like, now I was a big dude, right? But then that wasn't satisfying. I got to 225. That wasn't enough. I got to 235. That still wasn't. I was like 250, and it still wasn't enough. Like, there was no end to this. Like, I didn't know how. And now I look back at some old pictures, and I was like, oh, geez. Like, what was I thinking?
Do you have any?
There are a couple. There were a couple on Facebook. They're not that good. I'll see if I can dig them up. But, you know, then I look back, and I'm like, oh, that was okay. That was where was I going with that? Like, where did I actually think I was going to end with that? And there was no end. As far as I was concerned, there was no end. And so, but what was I achieving? I wasn't really achieving anything besides making the dial on a scale go up. But somewhere tied into that was all of these, you know, internal perceptions of, you know, how much of a man I thought I was, and, you know, respect and stuff like that. But you can't just, you know, and this is in the book, and anyone who's read the book, sorry, I apologize for repeating this stuff, but this is the concept of trying to big your way to success. Like, you know, you get some attention because of the size, and then you know, it's a bit intoxicating, so you just chase more and more size. But that never works, because you can't be defined. Now, this comes back to how you define yourself. You can't be defined as the big guy, because there's always a guy bigger than you. Like, right. Unless you're like 7 feet tall, you're still never going to be the big guy. There's always another guy that can be bigger than you, and another guy that's crazy enough to use more drugs that will in fact be bigger than you. So if you rest your definition of who you are and what makes you feel like confident in yourself and all of that stuff just on size, well, I can see how you'll easily fall into the trap of doing whatever it takes, including all the drugs in the world, just to have more and more size. And, right. You know, and then, you know, even though steroids aren't psychologically addictive or, chemically addictive, they can become psychologically addicted, because your identity is tied up into this size and literally this number on the scale. So it's no different at all than an anorexic defining themselves by how much they weigh.
Right.
And I just want to qualify that. I'm not trained in the psychology of anorexia, so I know there's more to it than that. But I'm just trying to draw the analogy of the body dysmorphia, the not recognizing what you're doing to yourself and how you look in the mirror and just staring at this number on a scale.
Right. I think for most people, kind of you're kind of touching around it. But if I could kind of bring it home for a second, maybe using the scale for most people would be as a measuring tool, as an absolute, as in don't necessarily pay attention to what the number is, but pay attention to what direction the number is going. If that makes sense. So if you weigh, like for me, I feel a lot better when I'm sub 200, a lot better, you know, and I'm still pretty, I'm still big dude. I mean, you know, for lack of a better term, I mean,
you want to be.
Right. I mean, I'm not the hugest guy in the world, but I mean, I'm definitely not looking at too many other guys in the gym that are doing some of the stuff that I'm doing. You know what I mean? So it's like, I've still got that if that was something that I was going for, I guess you could say. But you know, I realize at this point right now that I need to be lighter. You know, I mean, I'm looking at myself. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to do curls and watch my gut go away. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be able to, you know, do shoulder presses to the cows come home. And the next thing you know, I mean, I'm going to be ripped. Just not going to happen. And I realize that even, you know, how was it? I mean, maybe it was about 6 months ago. I was trying to extrapolate down, like, because it was really weird. I didn't want to be, you know, 180. I was like, I don't want to be 180. That just sounds like I'll just won't be cool or something. I don't know. But then you kind of, I don't know what it is. You're just scared of it.
Yeah, but our numbers say at your height that somewhere between 180 and 185 should work.
Right, and that's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, for the longest time, when I was at 212, I was like, all I got to do is get down to 190, and I'll be pretty ripped then, I think,
yeah,
the amount of mass I have. And then I'm down around 190, and I'm like, damn.
Yeah, there's still more to go. Yeah, like when you got to 192, you're standing in front of the mirror, you're going, yeah, I got more to go.
Yeah, I'm like, damn, is this 10 more pounds or is this 15 more pounds?
I was the same. I mean, and I knew it. Our numbers said it. But on your way down, you're like, yep, there's still more to go. And every guy I know who's competed in his first bodybuilding show, and you know, most guys who do their first show, at least a lot of guys I know anyways, they did their first show clean. And even guys who dabbled with, like, not a lot of drugs but a little bit of drugs – almost to a man, they were shocked when they got down to their competition, like when they were in competition shape and actually as lean as they thought they needed to be to try to win the show. They were shocked at how light they were. Like, they were just like, man, I can't believe I went that far down. And you know, some guy, like, I know guys who went from 240 down to 170 at like a height of, you know, 5'9", and even at 170 they still had a bit to go.
Right.
And these are guys who, like, were the big guy in the group and all that stuff. And they were just like, yeah, I wasn't quite in shape. I actually needed to be in the 160s to win that show. And that's about right for that height,
mm-hmm,
given the fact that they're not on tons of drugs. I mean, when you add in, like, a lot of testosterone, like a lot of exogenous drugs, then that's when the body weight number and the look associated with the number becomes skewed. Which completes the circle of our story here, which leads back into people not knowing what a weight versus a look is, because they don't know that the look that the person they're looking at, the magazine cover, whoever, the athlete or the model, they don't know what that model's taken or done or used to get to the look they're at that's correlated with the weight they think that look has.
What you kind of said earlier as far as, and I know we got a comment the other day about, we talked kind of about the, like, genetic limits and things like that. But basically, I think what you were saying was that steroids, so if a guy was, if he was clean and lean, let's say he might be 165 at whatever height he was, let's say 5'10 or whatever. But if he was roided up and jacked, it would be, what was it, like 25 pound, like,
20 or 25 pounds heavier.
Like just that type of – so basically steroids would increase your genetic limit by 25 pounds.
Well, that's a little too simplistic. I mean, there's other issues that go into that, like somatotype. Like if he's already a thick guy, like an endomorph versus an ecto, then there's there's Pilon's rule of sevens that go in there. And you know what I mean? Like it gets – there's other variations in there. That's why the steroid issue just wrecks all – like really confounds the whole situation, plus how much steroids. Like, is it a guy who uses just a couple hundred milligrams a week, or a guy who uses like literally 4 or 5 grams a week? Like, I know guys who do that. They actually use grams and grams of it a week, which is, which is insane. Like, that's an, like, you know, I know some guys who have enough testosterone in them for 50 guys. Like who even, that stuff has never been documented. No scientist has ever had their hands on a blood sample from a guy like that. Like, nobody actually even knows what's going on in their body. So, I'm talking guys who use like testosterone added to GH, added to insulin. Like, this is insane stuff, right? Like, nobody has a clue what's going on in their bodies. So you see, you know, a guy walk through the gym that's got all that going on in him, and you think you can do any of what he's doing, you gotta be kidding yourself, right? Like, you know, unless you want to do everything that he's actually doing. So,
right. You know what's, let me ask you this question just because it popped in my head and guys might be interested, but isn't GH and insulin, GH being growth hormone, aren't they kind of in the body normally like antagonizing things? So like, if a growth hormone is high and insulin is typically low, and
Oh yeah. If you read Eat Stop Eat, you'll figure that all that
right.
stuff out. Yeah, they're the opposite. They're the complete opposite hormones. Like, when you're in an insulin dominated metabolism, GH is low, and when you're in a GH dominant metabolism, insulin is low. And the way that they're controlled naturally is the fed fasted cycle, right? Which is, you know, which we explain that like in detail. But basically, the point is, when you're eating, you've got insulin is being secreted, and when you're not, and you've gone any length of, like, any appreciable length of time without food, GH is. So these guys are putting both of them in at the same time. Like,
right,
the human body's not even meant to have that. Like, I don't even know if it knows what to do with it when it's all there at the same time. It's kind of like when you hear about people doing GH therapy, like celebrities and stuff. Like, I'm very curious to know when they're actually, what times of day they're injecting themselves. And if they're trying to time it in between meals when the body would normally do GH and normally secrete its own GH, like in a pulse attempt. Like, I would actually assume that the smartest way I'm not saying do any of this, but my first guess as how to do it would be to take it when you're in between meals, when your normal hormone levels of GH are going up anyways, and when your normal insulin is lowering. So you're at least mimicking your body's natural pattern. But if you shot GH and then ate, like right then, your body would never do that, right? Like, it would never have a GH increase while fed. So you'd be putting yourself in a state that your body doesn't really recognize. I don't know. Maybe you get some weird reactions that just, you know, I don't know. I don't. Who knows what happens? Because I don't know that anyone's really studied that. Because I don't think you get a whole lot of ethics approval to do that to people. So it's. You know, well, and that's another thing. Like, that's the reason why science, quote, science, doesn't have answers to a lot of these things. People who are recreationally dosing themselves with all these cocktails of drugs, they couldn't really just walk into a lab and say, hey, I'd like you to study me. The lab wouldn't really get ethical approval to study them. Even if the lab's not administering the drug themselves, they kind of wouldn't even get approval to study them, which I think is a bit of a disservice. If these people are going to do it to themselves anyways, you might as well at least collect data and find out what's going on. But
right.
But most labs wouldn't want to touch it. So that's why they're just kind of these – they're like black boxes. They're like experiments that we're not allowed to look inside.
Interesting.
And those are the people that are the faces and the names of most of the fitness industry that most people reading the magazines think that they can look like.
Right. And so you're taking the workouts from those guys, the eating.
Yeah, they're eating tips, and you're just looking at them saying, that's the body size and type I want.
Right.
Chew on all of that and then decide if you ever want to look through a fitness magazine as your source for anything.
Right. That's interesting because, that the what's going on in that person's body is likely not the same things going on within your body. So, again, initial conditions are different. You know, you're going to have different results. So.
What's going on in that person's body not only is not likely going on in yours, it's not likely going on in most mammals. It's so messed up.
You know. Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've kind of talked about being light and talked about where we have been and things like that as far as being heavy. And even our own, I guess you could say, self-admitted troubles with being light as well. You talked on the bulk up phase and things like that. Do you feel like that some guys just use that as an excuse just to stay fat?
Yep. 100%.
like not to physically be in bulk up because they're not because they're trying to get to a heavier weight, but just as an excuse to say, oh, so if anybody asks them or if they ever get looked at or anything, like, oh, I'm just bulking up.
And it's yeah, it's an excuse to train for size. I even think that powerlifters to some degree might use it as an excuse to you know, they may poke fun at guys who are training for a look, like the sort of thing we promote with the Adonis Index workout and all, and the Adonis Effect, and just the look and the idea of being lean and in shape and, you know, like we said, permission to be lighter. I think not all, but some bodybuilders grasp or cling to the bodybuilding lifestyle, or sorry, powerlifters. Let me correct myself. I think some powerlifters cling to the powerlifting lifestyle because it gives them an excuse and a reason to be fatter without ever trying to be lean, and actually kind of it's a way out. It's a way to always explain that their size and their lack of ability to get into better conditioning or at least look lighter or look leaner. It's always an excuse because, well, then that, no, because they're training for strength and they're training for size, and then being any lighter would actually inhibit their strength gain. When in reality, at least some of them, it's just an excuse because they've never managed to get lean, or they have the complex where they're afraid to be lighter, and they pick on people who, or they call it, you know, training. They somehow look down on training for a look, and instead they're talking about training for specifically for just building strength, which is, you know, there's no money in powerlifting. I know lots of powerlifters, and that's purely a hobby for no other reason than you just are you know, in some cases you're just fascinated with being stronger and like to put up with those type of workouts. But it's, you know, it's not like you're going to get any money for it. So I don't know. I can't come up with any other reason why they look down their noses at some bodybuilders besides the fact that they're either jealous or can't do it, or they're holding on to their little story about how they're explaining away their inability to get into an aesthetically pleasing shape as well.
Well, you know, it's funny. You brought up the financials and things like that. I mean, realistically, I mean, I would have to look into it more, but beyond a few, I would say, outliers, I mean, I wouldn't say there's much money in bodybuilding either.
No, there's, I mean, are you kidding me? Just the top guys who are under contract by major supplement companies, they do okay. They get a decent living. And then the top, like, five, when I say the top, I mean maybe the top 30 or so, which I don't even think there's much more than that in the pros that place anywhere respectable at all anyways. And maybe out of them, the top 10 or so do better, significantly better than the ones below that. And then everybody else is making no money and they're just funding it themselves.
Right. But I guess how much of that money would be going back into
drugs?
Yeah.
Most of it. I mean, maybe not for the top guys. The top guys probably make enough money that not all their money's disappearing into drugs. But almost everybody else is in a loss position. They're actually spending more money on drugs than they were ever getting in, like, the winning little local shows here and there and stuff like that.
Right. So you would have to actually qualify it as a hobby.
All of this is a hobby. Sure. All of this is a hobby. So is powerlifting. Powerlifters don't make any money. And they spend all kinds of money on you know, lifting shirts and stuff like that, and fancy equipment they bring to the gym and stuff like that.
Right.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with either of those hobbies if you're into it, but view it for what it is. A lot of people, their entire identities get wrapped up in this stuff, and it's how they define themselves, which is, I mean, that's kind of weird if that's how you define yourself, with a really expensive hobby that drains your, like, bank account. Like, that's kind of an odd way to define yourself.
Right. I mean, it's kind of interesting that we're kind of going down this path, because, like I say, we're not putting anybody down. I mean, I know tons of cool guys that this is what they do, and, you know, nothing wrong with it. They love it. I mean, they're that's their thing. But I guess our caveat here is to realize that the guys are doing it for a hobby, and that if your goals are something different, if your overall goal is something different than that, then you need to understand that.
Yeah, and not fall into that trap. Like, it's, I mean, exactly. Like, there's nothing wrong, and clearly we promote the idea of taking care of your body, working hard in the gym, and actually building your body into something that's better than if you didn't build it. I mean, that's just a given. That's what we're here. That's what we're talking about here. But that has to have a limit before it completely consumes who you think you are.
Right.
And so, and this, I guess, comes back to why do you want to gain weight? Like, do you just want to look better for the purpose of it, for what we think is the concept of the better look has an effect on your relationships, your potential career success, like all the things that go into the Adonis effect. If that's the case, well, then why not actually try to apply it with some reason and some critical thinking and just build just the right look for your size as opposed to just arbitrarily deciding heavier is better.
Right. I mean, I guess, not I guess, but the real reason that, you know, for me, it's really funny because a lot of the people I know that get into, you know, trying to get in better shape and things like that, the reason they do it is because they want a better life. It's the same thing people when they try to make more money. They do it because they want a better life. They want to be able to do more things and be financially free and things like that. But the funny thing is that, and this happens to me with work and a lot of times too, is that what your goal, your overall goal, what you want, a lot of times you kind of miss it. So like now I actually have to remind myself that the reason I work so hard is so I can actually play hard too. So, because a lot of times I'll just work. And so my whole goal is vanished. I mean, I'm not even going to my main goal, which is to be able to have more fun.
Yeah, well, perfect example. Okay, so I'll bring in the Gators. Urban Meyer, the head coach of Florida Gators, just resigned, like today.
Really?
Yeah, or he announced it yesterday.
Oh,
so,
wow.
And people are like, well, what's going on here? How is it that it looks like you're at the peak of your career. You've just won two titles. You're, you know, playing for a Sugar Bowl. Like, you're doing really well. How is it? What are you doing? But his health, like, he was brought to the hospital after the championship game they just played, and his health is at risk now, and his, you know, I guess he's worried about being able to see his kids grow up and all that kind of stuff. And so his goal of being the most successful coach and winning championships may, you know, it looks like it's kind of killing him. So mm-hmm. What's the point? So what kind of goal is that? So like you just said, I mean, that's a perfect real life example of a coach who looks like he's literally on top of, he's at the kind of a powerhouse program, and they're winning all the time. It's everything every coach would look saying, that's the coach I want to be. And it's consuming him to the point where he actually has to step down just so he can stay healthy.
Right. And it's the same thing that happens a lot of times. And we've talked about this before. People in health and fitness and things like that, they get so wrapped up into being healthier and getting in health and fitness. They become advocates for all this stuff. So they spend all their time on all these different forums and reading all the blogs and reading all the newsletters. I mean, we're talking hours and hours and hours a day when, you know, the real reason that the majority of people that I know try to get in any type of better shape is to increase their social value around the people that they know. But the fact is they're not even that goal is gone now. You know, it's like got skewed. So you're not even going to that goal anymore. You've got something else that you kind of, you know, that's why we talk about keeping everything so simple, because you're doing this to further your lifestyle, not necessarily to become an expert in this area. That's what John's for. That's why you get to ask him questions, because this is his area. You know, you don't want to be the expert in this. I surely don't. I just pick up the phone.
So I mean, and that goes for any other area in your life. There's stuff you want to do, and that's whatever it is that you're doing, that's the thing you're the expert in. And you just can, if you hate that and you want to change it, and this happens to be what you want to do, well, that's fine. Then, you know, learn that stuff. But for most people, I don't think that's the point. The point is, like
right.
Brad just said, you know that there's some big time social payoff to getting yourself into, quote, better shape. And then that almost doesn't need to be explained. Everyone inherently gets that. They get the fact that they get more attention, better type of attention, just all of the things that go along with it. Like we said, it doesn't necessarily fair that looks matters, you know, and the way you present yourself matter as much as they do, but they do. And since you can change those things, people get the fact that it's important to change them.
Right. You know, it's also funny, and I'll say this because I've had to kind of self-check myself on a bunch of different things, but it's kind of like when you're crawling up, like if you're in a big forest and all you can see is the forest around you, well, then you're screwed. But if you climb the tree and you kind of can stand on top of the tree and look over, you kind of get to see that, you know, it might not be as cracked up. Once you get to the top of where you're at, you'll find out that a lot of this stuff isn't as cracked up as you think it is. And that's when you kind of look at it and go, okay, well, all right, well, yeah, I definitely don't need to do this. I don't need to do this. I don't need this. Because everybody who's at the top of the game, supposedly, I mean, I'm looking at their life right now, and it doesn't match up to what I want. So I better check that. I read an interesting study. This is going to be kind of a side thing, but I read an interesting study about why there aren't as many women in CEO-type positions as there are men now, with all of the kind of equal rights stuff. And, you know, right now, probably as a time that, I mean, women and men are probably pretty getting pretty close to being, you know, as far as equal and stuff like that in the workplace. But what they were saying was that what tends to happen is that women will make it to a certain height, I guess you could say, in the corporate world or whatever. And then they'll see, once they get up there, how hard and how much those guys that are at the top have to put in. Like, and we're talking like no times with families and all this other stuff, that all this dedication that this takes. And they look at it, they get to the top of the tree and they look over, and what they thought they wanted, they look at it and they're like, man, I don't want that.
I don't
get to spend any time with family. I don't get to do this. I don't want that.
Yeah.
It's not that I can't do the job. I just don't want that.
Yeah, and then it's easy to kind of go back from there and recognize that men and women are slightly, you know, they're different in the way they value certain things like that. And I can see how they're like, I'm not going any further with this. This isn't where I want it to be. That's interesting, because I did some work at a company in Orlando where we did corporate performance for like CEOs and high level people in major corporations, to teach them how to manage high stress big time jobs, I guess you could say. I don't really know what the word is. We're talking CEOs and directors of major global companies would come there, and we would teach them how to like get through another year of working at such a high stress job without it kind of burying them or like consuming their whole life. And some of the things we actually had to teach them was to actually take a weekend and just go out with their kids. And we actually had to get, and so companies would come in groups, and we'd actually have to teach them to hold each other accountable for things like that. So like with this one guy, he actually just made a commitment to, his commitment to the group was to take his kids out once in the next 6 months and actually follow through with it, because he had reneged for like the past 2 years. And the group's job was to hold him accountable for that one weekend. That was it. That's how much more intense it gets when you get to those levels. And we're talking global directors of, I mean, I won't name the company, but it's a big company that everyone listening definitely buys products from. So, and like you said, I mean, a lot of people get there and they're like, oh my God, I didn't know this is what it was like. And I can't believe this is what I thought I wanted. And, right. You know, that's part of this whole body weight thing. If you mm-hmm. think you want to be 30 pounds heavier, do you really know what that means? Like, do you actually know what 30 pounds – if you actually want 30 pounds more muscle on the body you have right now without gaining an ounce of fat, I bet you don't really know what that actually entails.
And it probably entails a bunch of money outlay that you don't want to kick out.
Money outlay to people that you don't want to owe money to.
Yeah. Let's not even get into the mafioso.
Well, just – yeah, you're not dealing in the legitimate market, and that's the kind of stuff like – you know, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. Like, I am not indicting anyone for any kind of, you know, any – whatever it is that you want to do, that's fine if that's what you want to do. But just be clear that that's actually what you want to do. And what I think is most people don't really know what they want. Like, I've got a buddy who's been 180 pounds for the last, I don't know, 10 years. He's in good shape and stuff. He's about 5'10", 5'11", and he's right where he basically needs to be. And for the last 10 years, we whenever we're just chatting casually or having a beer, he's always talking about gaining weight. And I'm like, haven't you figured it out yet? You're never going to – this is it. Like, this is the size you can be. And there's nothing wrong with your size, but he's just kind of always mentions it. And I'm like, do you think in 10 years you would have – if it was actually possible for you to just really keep – do you really think you're just following the wrong workout, or that you've just missed on – you know, in 10 years, do you think you've just been missing on the protein content? Like, what makes you think 10 more pounds is possible, or gaining weight from here is possible?
Without totally consuming your life.
Yeah, like, let's say you could even do it naturally. without right. it completely consuming your entire life and rejigging everything that you do, is that the point? Like, is the point to rearrange your life to gain a pound? Like, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Right. What was that quote you said? You and Pilon were talking about the thing in the fitness industry is what is
oh, the impossible.
To make major changes in your life to get minute changes in your body or something like that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. Basically, like your entire life needs to be rearranged for a minute measurable change in your body. So it's like, is that really what you're after? And so,
right.
So, I mean, and again, this all comes back to all you want is a better looking body because of all the social benefits it provides that you don't need to be told it provides. It just happens. Now, the thing is you're kind of going on faith until you actually get in shape for it to actually happen. It's kind of like the effect. You can read about the effect, but it's different when you experience it. And you only experience it when you're in the shape. It all kind of happens at once. Like, you have to be there to get it.
Right. Yeah, so that's the whole point. I mean, you know, we've kind of been on the heavy side. You've been a lot heavier than I have, obviously, and seen over the top of the trees and, you know, tried all the different stuff. And, you know, quite frankly, it's just not worth it.
Unless you're into just being as big as possible just fascinates you to the point where you just have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the other thing. If you're actually going to do it, you're not going to like try to do it a way that you want to do it. You're just going to do it the way the big guys did it. And that's what I did. I just went to the big guys. I'm like, how did you do that? And when they finally told me, I just had to decide. I'm like, am I going to do that or not? And I'm like, all right, I did it. You know, and anyone who read the book knows exactly how I did that. And that's it. There's nothing else to it. Looking at that and saying, oh, I'm going to do it a different way, those are the guys who 20 years later are like, okay, I'm almost there, you know, and they're still not doing it. So,
right.
Which is the genesis of the whole Adonis look and the golden ratio and the AI. All of that stuff came from the perspective from on the top of the tree. I really like your analogy. Once you're looking at it from that point, you're like, this isn't right, so let's go back into the forest and figure this out.
Yeah, it's definitely different. Let me tell you something, guys. If you're thinking about trying to gain weight, take it from me. Take it from John. We're doing it right now. Cutting down sucks.
Yeah, don't gain weight and think that you're building muscle mass and then going to cut down. This isn't exactly fun.
It sucks, dude.
Yeah.
It sucks. I mean,
if you don't have to go through it, don't go through it.
Yeah, don't do it, man. I mean, if you're scared about being heavy, I mean, it's the terror is battling the scale on the way down. That sucks. I mean, good God. I mean, you don't even want to mess with that.
I guess it's for another topic, but the idea of somatotypes, I guess we'll touch on it really briefly here. For skinny guys, I guess you could say like ectomorphs, like true ectomorphs, and they're rare, but I know they're out there. True ectomorphs who
like Pierre,
yeah, like Pierre, who are really lean. Hey, be happy with what you got. You've got like ectomorphs, like true ectomorphs, like Pierre, have a level of leanness that is easily maintained that most guys just will never get to, or would need to spend like months and months and months, like diligently dieting and training to get to just for a few days. Like that's something you have that mesos and endos don't really have. On the flip side, you're probably never going to have the muscle mass that a meso can, an endomorph can actually build, but you'll always have the definition. At both ends of the spectrum, the endos, the true endos and the true ectos can converge to some degree to a middle where the ecto can definitely build size and the endo can definitely get leaner. And I mean, it'll always be obvious that you, where you started and kind of be happy with the fact that you started somewhere that you had something on your side. The ectos have the definition on their side and the endos have the muscle mass on their side. And that's, you know, and that's just where you are. And then all the rest of us are somewhere in the middle. So kind of, you know, I guess count yourself lucky for having one of those two as your advantage if you are there. Because the measles, we kind of don't have either. We're just sort of somewhere in the middle. So, I guess part of it's just accepting the type of shape you can have for your beginning starting material.
Right. Yeah, and that's the other thing I like about our stuff is that, you know, it's just, to me now, looking at it, you know, all over, it just tends to make sense. It's easier on people's lives. I mean, it's basically, okay, here, I don't even want to say the fundamentals, but here's what you want. Here's what you say you want. And based on what you say you want, here's what you need to do and nothing else. None of the other stuff. You know, just forget all that stuff exists. That's why we tell everybody. That's why we tell people, look, man, if you're going to hang out with us and listen to our podcasts and get our newsletters and stuff like that, just please unsubscribe from everybody else's stuff, because it's just going to make everything that much more complicated for you. And it just gives us that much more work to try to deconstruct things for you, which we don't mind doing, but it would be a lot easier if, you know, you just listen to us.
Well, and part of it is the paralysis by analysis. I think so many people are just wrapped up in reading this stuff. And I mean, I can see how paralysis by analysis happens in this industry. If you're chasing an unattainable goal, it that begets this information seeking to no end. Because if you're trying stuff and it's not working, all because you're chasing a goal that's not actually possible to do with what you're trying, it makes sense that you're like, oh man, that didn't work. What's the next thing? And then that didn't work. And what's the next thing? And as long as, you know, you're being kind of led down this path of this path of like the next thing is the thing that'll do it, you know. And in this case, muscle gaining, it's like, oh, you actually have to do this, and this is part of the piece you were missing, and you didn't combine your post workout supplementation with your diet properly, and then well that only works with this kind of workout, like just on and on and on. It's like, but all of this is trying to get to a size that you just can't get to. So yeah, I mean, you can read about it forever. Like, how is it possible that, like, every issue of a muscle magazine has another way of building your arms and building your legs? Like, the body only responds to certain things, and it only can grow so big, and that's it. There's nothing else to it. So, yeah, I mean, I guess there'll never be an end of stuff for us to kind of explain and deconstruct, but once you kind of try it and actually see a program through to its completion and then see where you get to, at least it'll be a little bit easier for you to pick through it yourself, because you have the authority of experience on your side. You've actually done it once and you're like, oh, I know exactly how much I weighed when I had a six pack, and it wasn't what any of the magazines are telling me is possible. Or, you know, I trained on that program for a year straight and I only gained 2 pounds of muscle. So I know that kind of workout with that kind of dedication and, you know, whatever supplementation only translates in. Like, I don't care what the next article says. I know from experience that that's as far as that system gets me. So right. I guess what we're trying to build a system that, where our system's based on knowing all of that stuff and just directing you to what we think is the most applicable kind of, end goal. Like, we're just trying to set a realistic goal and be like, you know, from what we know, this is really what you should be focusing on, and it'll save you a ton of heartache too, like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, a ton of heartache, ton of time, ton of
cash. That's the other thing. Save you cash.
Cash. Yeah, I mean, you're not spending tubs of money on either illegal stuff or supplementation or you know, different types of lifting apparatus, you know, to help you, shirts and, you know, all the latest and greatest sneakers or whatever. I mean, you know, that's the one thing that I will say in the new year. In the new year, and I want you to think about this. Start with the simplest thing first. And our stuff is pretty simple. I mean, it's laid out. I mean, you just open it up and do it. You know,
let's just be clear here. This isn't a pitch for our stuff. You can, anything you want to try, go ahead. And but try the simplest, as Brad's saying.
Yeah, try to find the simplest possible thing that you can try that is a complete. So that's like a complete system, but it's simple. It's going to work with your life. You know it's going to work with your life. You're not going to have to rearrange 50 million things to be able to do it. Start with the simplest thing first and go that. Because, you know, for a lot of people, this is what I used to see back in the day when I used to do health club consulting. You know, I've literally talked to thousands of people face-to-face. And this is typically what happens with people when they make a decision to get in shape somehow, some way. Now, this either means gain muscle or lose fat or whatever, but it goes something like this. It goes, there's usually like five things they're going to do. They're going to start working out more. They're going to start eating better. And they haven't even qualified what eating better necessarily means. They're going to stop smoking. They're going to stop drinking. and there's like usually one more thing that they're going to do. So there's like five things all at one time that they're going to try to do all at once, and it never happens because it's just so many things at once that people are trying to do. And that's what happens with a lot of this stuff is that, okay, not only you have to eat six times a day, so now you have to change your day and how you cook and how you do all this stuff to make that happen. And then there's a certain time of the day you need to work out because apparently, quote unquote, working out in the morning burns more fat or whatever. Or if you work out later at night, you'll gain more muscle because you'll be stronger or whatever. You know, so you have to totally, not only you have to change your day because of how you're going to cook your food, but now you got to change your day how you're going to work out. And then you got to change your day to make sure you get all your sleep you need and all this stuff. And then, you know, if you're not going to drink beer or anything like that, and well, now, you know, you can't be as social as you used to be, or you could, but now you're not going to go out to the bar, not want to go out to the bar that much because, you know, you might drink and lo and behold, all your muscles going to fall off if you drink. And so can you see it? I'm sure you can see just how encompassing a lot of this stuff can happen. And it's just not.
It's too much. It's trying to do too much too soon. It's so the idea is to try to do one thing that's simple and try to and do it, like follow it through. I don't care what program you pick ours or pick something. Try to pick something that's simple and actually do it. Like if you don't actually do it, you kind of have no right to comment on it because you've not tried it. Now with that said, if you critically evaluate a bunch of different programs and some of them seem too cumbersome, that in and of itself is telling you the program might have a problem. Because if part of the program's kind of rules are for you to rearrange your life, then you got to really stop and think, do I want to do that much work? Like if the thing's going to work, if I do it, but I have to, like what Brad said, I have to rearrange all these different things and change the way, like if, you got to decide if that's worth it to you.
Right. And most of the time it's not because
what's the goal? Is the goal to rearrange your life or to a new system, or is the goal to have some kind of system that fits into your life? So,
mm-hmm. That's exactly right, man. So
I mean, we should wrap up here, I guess.
Yeah, I was gonna say we pretty much beat that to death. I mean, if you guys want to check out our stuff, just go to AdonisIndexSystems.com. You can pick it up. Like I say, there's a trial going on that, you don't even have to take our word for it. You can test it out for $5, and if it works for you, it works for you. If not, you can, you know, that's all you're out. It's $5. No big deal. You test it out for 30 days. So anyway, I don't think you've got anything else. Do you got anything else?
Well, I mean, what are our take-home messages about the gaining weight versus gaining muscle?
Well, for me, I mean, I can, like I say, my big take-home message is this, I'm 6 foot. I've been over 200 pounds. You know, I'm not going to say I'm necessarily the strongest guy in the gym, but I'm probably definitely in the top 80% or the top 20%, excuse me, you know, or probably even top 10% of most of the people that walk in there. And I am looking at myself critically going, I probably need to be about 180, you know, to look the way I want to look.
Yeah.
Even at the strength levels that I'm at. And the second take home is that you don't want to gain weight as far as fat if you don't have to, because it sucks on the way back down. It's a lot more fun to eat whatever you want to and qualify it by saying, I'm trying to bulk up, but what comes up must go down. And that going down, it sucks.
Yeah, there's no other way to say it. So yeah, so those are really good points to take home. My other thing to add to that is where do you get your idea of how heavy you want to be? Like how do you come up with that number? And, you know, critically evaluate all the sources of input that are giving you an idea that that number is the number you want, and kind of evaluate them and decide, you know, do you know any of those sources well enough to know if that number is even achievable the way you think you can achieve it? Like, if it's a fitness competitor, if it's a bodybuilder, if it's an athlete, do you know them? Do you actually know that number is accurate? You know, have you seen scientific research that proves that that's possible? So if you can't answer if you don't have a definite answer to those things or can, you know, be like for sure no, then you might need to reevaluate the actual weight you think you should even be in the first place.
Right. And I guess a good thing to do is that, you know, you can look at some of the pictures of some of the guys that we put up, you know, some of the winners, and then when John puts his new picks up in the next couple of weeks, when I put mine up in the next couple of weeks, and Pelon will put his up in the next couple of weeks, and we'll put weights down on where we're at. Versus those pictures and how tall we are and stuff like that. And you can decide if that's a look you want, well, then that's where you need to be. Mm-hmm. So,
and I guess the final take-home message is give yourself permission to be light.
Yeah.
Like it's most people who are – most guys who are listening to this or guys who are concerned about gaining weight or not, part of it is a fear of being light, but there's just nothing to be afraid of.
No, of course not, especially when it comes time to try to get out of your car and your gut gets in the way. That sucks.
All right.
Oh, God. All right, guys. We'll see you next week.